Robert Lee area. And so it means a lot to us to be recognized here and have our truth told and just be acknowledged. It's a very big deal.
Yeah, it is. And again, I think it can be used as a revitalization of us Ho-Chunk, because I remember being at the Mankato powwow and they were talking about people that were there, and they were doing a shovel ceremony because I think they're opening up a new powwow arena down there. And I just kind of said, well, what about Ho-Chunks to the master of ceremony? And I said, absolutely. Why don't you get in there? So I got in there with a shovel and a hard hat and looking dope, I'm sure. And got some dirt. So, you know, if we're not speaking, Ho-Chunk, Ho-Chungala means people of the sacred voice, and that's who we are. And it's also been kind of defined as the big voice. So we speak up for ourselves, and we appreciate our allies out there that are speaking on our behalf. And also with this book specifically, Haley, people vetted this out, and I know Professor Amy Lone Tree had a lot to do with it, and she vetted it out. So it's, you know, not so much a white history about Ho-Chunk, but a Ho-Chunk history, and we really appreciate it. And she's going to be in town too, and I just want to read the back of the book here, which she put, Professor Lone Tree put, "The Banish Forever is a powerful written and compelling history of the Ho-Chunk Nation in Minnesota and the colonial forces seeking their removal from the state in the 19th century. It is pervasively argued, engagingly written, well-researched, and urgently needed. It will also make a lasting contribution to many areas of scholarship. This book needs to be in the hands of people all across Minnesota and beyond." So that's a little back of the sleeve written endorsement of the book.
Yeah, I'm so excited to read this and just learn more about our family's history and our ancestors. So allies, our friends and relatives, our neighbors, please come join us at All My Relations Art Gallery, 1414 East Franklin Avenue, this coming Wednesday, January 17th. From 5:30 to 7, we'll be Native Roots Radio. We'll be doing a live first half broadcasted show out there. And then there'll be book signing as well and a chance to purchase the book.
Well, and not only that, I'll be speaking, Amy Lone Tree will be speaking, and Kathy Coates will do a reading and have a question and answer. So
that's good time.
That's going to be a good time. So come on out there. It's free, and unless you want to purchase the book. And I'll be wearing some sort of ribbon shirt or something, and Haley will have a ribbon skirt on, and we'll be chilling like villains here at this opening, this book opening.
Yeah, as we always do.
Is that what it's called, the book opening? No. Book reading, book sale. But yeah, we're excited as Ho-Chunks to have this history brought up again, and a whole book written about the removal of us, and that, you know, this has been our lands before there were borders. And so we're really excited to be acknowledged and talked about in a good way. And I hope everyone can make it.
Yeah, we look forward to seeing you there. I know a couple more things going on this weekend before the next coming week. For our relatives and friends up near the Duluth area, there is the Gitche Manitou Geezi's Great Spirit Moon Powwow happening this Friday, January 12th, and Saturday, January 13th, Friday 7 to 8:30, and Saturday 10 a.m. registration, 1 to 7, grand entry, 5 p.m. a feast. And this is taking place at the Black Bear Casino Resort, the Otter Creek Event Center.
Wow. Anything else going on? We got like a minute to kill before we get State Senator Mary Kunish on.
Absolutely. So going into the arts too, we got the last weekend to go see the In My Hands exhibit out at the Minneapolis Institute of Art, as well as the closing reception of the current exhibit, Abijiwan Ikiyut Yanale, at All My Relations Arts. The closing reception for that exhibit at AMRA is happening this Saturday from 12 to 2, again at 1414 East Franklin Avenue, Minneapolis. Wow.
That's exciting. Hey, we got a minute left here. Why don't we end this with a little harmony here? We'll be right back. This is Native Roots Radio presents I'm Awake in our Friday edition. Up next, State Senator Mary Kunish.
The statistics say that 1 in 3 Native women and 1 in 6 Native men have experienced sexual assault in their lifetime. It means our whole community is affected by sexual violence. 1 is too many. Don't stand by. Stand up. Don't engage in acts of sexual violence and shut down the dirty jokes, the gossip, the victim blaming and shaming. As a community, we can change the way we respond. Contact the Minnesota Indian Women Sexual Assault Coalition to attend a workshop to learn more.
Sponsored by the Minnesota Indian Women Sexual Assault Coalition.
The city of Minneapolis is now on Native Roots Radio with Minneapolis AIR. AIR stands for American Indian Relations. Host Christine McDonald talks to people about important things affecting the city's Native communities. Minneapolis AIR dives into topics like public safety, public health, elections, and so much more. Tune in to Minneapolis AIR on Native Roots Radio from 5 to 6 p.m. on the second Wednesday of every month, right here on AM 950.
Hi, I'm Claudia with MinSure, Minnesota's official health insurance marketplace. With MinSure, you can compare health plans from multiple companies and get free help from a trusted expert. Whatever health plan you choose with MinSure, it's guaranteed to cover essential benefits, so you can get the care you need. See if you qualify for discounts, available only through MinSure. If you need quality, comprehensive health insurance, get started now at MinSure.org.
Hi, I'm Jane Fonda, and you're listening to Native Roots Radio.
And we're back to Native Roots Radio presents I'm Awake, and this is Robert Pilot. Hey, welcome back to Native Roots Radio presents I'm Awake, and I'm your host, Robert Pilot.
This portion of the show is supported by the Minnesota Indian Women's Sexual Assault Coalition.
Hey, we got State Senator Mary Kunish, and it's Friday, and we love having a little fireside chat, sacred fire going on here on Native Roots Radio, and talk about things that are going on here in the state and the country politically and just what's happening. Welcome, as always, State Senator Mary Kunish of Minnesota.
I'm Kate Tawashte, everybody. Thank you. I'm happy to be here with you, Haley and Robert, on really a beautiful Friday in Minnesota. We're just all waiting for that snow to finally get here. My goodness.
Yeah, I guess it's hitting big in Wisconsin. So, you know, we're protected by some outside force, and they're getting hit with snow, and I guess we'll get a little, but thanks for joining us. And it's always fun to wrap up the Friday with you, talk about a lot of positive things and, you know, what's happened in local government here in the state of Minnesota that, you know, we're just really happy and proud that you represent us and that we are a blue state. So I just want to say a big peeny geegy.
Yeah, you are very welcome. And I thank my lucky stars quite often that I'm able to be a legislator in this state that recognizes the human rights of people, the reproductive rights, the educational rights, the general, human rights that go along with being a good citizen in Minnesota. And I'm just glad that I'm able to contribute to that and to really promote the good work that we're all doing.
Yeah, it's interesting. I remember you've been on the show a very long time. And as a matter of fact, State Senator, we just celebrated 7 years being on the air in January, the beginning of January, the first Saturday. And you remember we were on Saturdays for so long.
Yeah, I do remember that. And sometimes on Sundays, like for hours, we would just, people would just, you know, cycle in and say their piece, and then somebody would leave and somebody else. Yeah. Wow. Yeah. 7 years. Congratulations.
Well, we did the Sunday symposium, and you helped me out big time with that. And we had people all over the country on Sunday. And we were wondering how Indian country, that was 4 years ago, how Indian country is dealing with COVID.
Yeah.
And it was great having a talking circle with all these different people, leaders and different people all over Turtle Island. We got to rev that up again and maybe do one
a year. It was incredible. I mean, the people that you brought in, of course, I didn't know them, and they were all leaders in really unique ways in their communities, with California, Arizona, like all over the country, people, these leaders were calling in and talking about the issues of the day and the struggles, which seem to be the common thread, you know, through all of our states, but how they are, they approached it and how they did some problem solving. And I found it fascinating.
Well, I learned something, and was that Navajo Nation does not have running water. And that freaked us out because we all didn't. That was before we had any kind of vaccine or anything. And we had one Navajo doctor on, and she we all did this. You know, if we were out in the public, we'd take our clothes off and shower them at the door. So we didn't know how people were getting infected. It was crazy, the beginning of COVID. And that was the first time I ever heard. Because we had a doctor from Navajo Nation, the only Native woman doctor there, and she was working 24 hours a day, that they had no running water.
Right. Yeah. It boggles our mind, doesn't it?
Yeah.
But I remember growing up here in Minnesota, my dad taking us up to the different, you know, reservations up in northern Minnesota, the Anishinaabe Ojibwe, and he did some pro bono work for them. He was a lawyer, and there were a lot of communities that didn't have running water. And so that's, you know, like in the last 60 years ago here in Minnesota. And when you think about, like, for example, the Mille Lacs tribe of Ojibwe, really and truly, until they got their casino and were able to start generating dollars that they reinvested and folded back into the community infrastructure, their water system was terrible, and the county was not interested in supporting them or bringing good, clean, clear water, drinkable water to them. And when they finally built their own water system, I believe they went to the city or to the county and said, "Hey, we're going to be putting this in. If you want to partner with us, we're happy to partner with you and make it, you know, expand it for everybody." And they turned the tribe down.
Oh, geez.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, we shouldn't be shocked that in this day and age, there still are communities that don't have that kind of running water, but it is really a sad state of being if that's the case here in the United States of America, that's happening. Yeah. I understand, you know, the remote locations that people live, especially in Navajo country, but nonetheless, let's make a real concerted effort.
Yeah, and just to back up what we were saying too about how great it is to live in Minnesota, when you were state representative, it wasn't all peaches and cream. We had like a separated Republican Democrat House and governor and all that, and now we have the trifecta. But you've gone through some pain dealing with I don't know, bills not being able to be passed for, you know, the Republicans aren't for anything. They're just against things. And so I just commend you for sticking it out. Really?
Yeah, there's a lot of education to be done. And if it's one thing that I and our House members are doing, we're doing a lot of educating, and not just of the legislature, but of the general public. And I think it's making a big positive effect here in Minnesota.
Absolutely. And we talk about this too, that other states are looking at what we're doing. I should say what you are doing. That is just a great feeling. You know, people are watching what we're doing. People are moving here. I feel really happy. And when I do feel blue about what's happening, maybe nationally, I look at our state as a beacon of hope. Hey, one of the things too that Haley and I were talking about before we got on was is the state parks, Haley. We have the bill writer here. It's exciting. Want to just give a quick blurb on that, Haley?
Yeah, well, thank you, Mary, one, for working on that. I know myself, I enjoy all of our state parks and our county parks even, but I just saw something. So Upper Sioux Agency State Park near Granite Falls is being returned to the Upper Sioux community due to the land's historic and cultural importance to the tribe, which is huge. I think this is just something that kind of every, whether you're res native or urban native, we all kind of advocate for land back. And it's not, you know, just because we want it back, and it means and holds so much importance to us. So that's huge. And I just want to remind everyone too, that the state has free state park days this year, and one coming up this Monday, January 15th, and then also April 27th, June 8th, and November 29th.
Yeah. Yeah. Minnesota, again, is blessed with, some really fabulous, wonderful state parks. But this Upper Sioux Agency State Park is one that is very unique. The fact that it's not a large park, it's about, I think, 1,200 or so acres. And it's actually a beautiful piece of land, I'm not going to lie. I was just over that way and by the park about 2 weeks ago. But it's it's been a state park for a while, and there are trails on there. You could go horseback riding, hiking, snowmobiling, all of that kind of stuff. But what's important and why it was returned to the Upper Sioux community, and I'll say that Chair Jensvold of the Upper Sioux was very instrumental in this, because he had been fighting for almost two decades to get this back to the Upper Sioux community. He was determined, and he did not give up for a moment. But this, after the Treaty of Traverse des Sioux of 1851, that treaty moved the Dakota natives from Iowa and Minnesota to a reservation that was just 20 miles long along the side of the Mississippi River Valley here in Minnesota. And that's when the Yellow Medicine Agency was established to administer the terms of that treaty. But then come 1862, and that agency was destroyed in the U.S. Dakota War. And the land was, you know, that land is the site of starvation and death of the Dakota people. And that was the consequence of the U.S. government intentionally failing to provide food and promised supplies.
Yeah.
And so, do we need to stop?
Yes, that we can take a break. That's okay. Cool. Right on. Oh, Mary's getting it. She's been on the show 6 years, and now she's hearing the music now. All right. Hey, we'll be right back. This is Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and we're here with
locally grown radio, your home for news, talk, and sports from Rudolph to Nakusa, 97.5 FM and WFHR 1320 AM.
CBS News Brief. Houthi media report new strikes on Yemen's rebel-held capital a day after multiple attacks by U.S. and U.K. forces. When asked if the Houthis should be declared a terrorist group, President Biden says,
it's irrelevant whether they're designated. We've put together a group of nations that are going to say that if they continue to act and behave as they do, we'll respond.
Blizzard conditions are paralyzing the Midwest, and as the Weather Channel's Mike Bettis reports,
it brings an Arctic chill across the lower 48. You take a look at wind chills, they really dive 30, 40 degrees below zero, be very common, and some of the really cold air could stretch all the way down to the Gulf Coast.
Feds in Buffalo have decided to seek the death penalty in the case of the supermarket mass shooter. Terry Connors, attorney for some of the victims' families, praises prosecutors.
The lawyers wanted to really know what the families thought, because it's a factor. It's one of the factors in the determination as to whether or not you seek the death penalty. So yes, they were very considerate.
CBS News Brief, I'm Jennifer Kuiper.
For Civic Media News, I'm Nate Wuggehout. Here's what Wisconsin needs to know. Keeping the power on is one of the biggest challenges in a big winter storm. 23,000 homes and businesses in Wisconsin lost their electricity at one point Friday morning. The hardest hit area was Milwaukee County. Wisconsin lawmakers will likely take up tax cuts again. The Wisconsin Policy Forum says it would be hard to cut taxes without also cutting public services. Democrats say they'll prioritize working families.
People do want to have the services that are going to allow them and their families to live a good life in their communities. And they also want to feel like their tax burden is fair, right? And they see the benefit of that. So we try to balance all of those things.
Assembly Democratic Minority Leader Greta Neubauer speaking with Wisconsin Eye. I'm Nate Wuggehout, Civic Media News.
Celebrating 75 years.
We got something going here in Madison.
On the ice.
Shoots and scores again.
Against the boards.
He hangs on. Badgers kill off the major.
Between the pipes.
Redirect another fantastic stop.
This is Badger Hockey.
Shoots one, scores. Wow.
It's everything.
For the win, he shoots and scores.
Badger Hockey lives here.
Keep it going, baby.
The Badger Sports Network from Learfield.
Wisconsin Rapids weather. I'm Corey Hartman. For tonight, snow and blowing snow continue. A winter storm warning remains in effect. A few more inches of snowfall accumulation possible. Winds blow at around 35 to 40 out of the northwest. Temperatures plummet throughout the day on your Saturday and bitterly cold Saturday night.
Currently 26 degrees.
Do you catch yourself quoting TV shows like that? It could win you a free meal and make you our next star of the day with Culver's. Join the morning show on WFHR every Friday.
What you talking about, Willis?
My name's James, and I'm telling people every Friday we'll play a theme song or a quote from a movie.
Frankly, my dear, I don't give it.
You call 424-2600, give the correct answer, and you'll win a family pack from our Wisconsin Rapids Culver's.
To the Batmobile.
Join the morning show every Friday for Culver's Star of the Day.
I love it when a plan comes together.
Your hometown news talk and sports station is locally grown radio, 97.5 FM and WFHR 1320 AM.
Welcome back to Native Roots Radio Presents. I'm Awake, and this is Robert Pilot. Hey, welcome back to Native Roots Radio Presents. I'm Awake, and I'm your host, Wakunja Hare.
This portion of the show is supported by JS Bean Factory off Randolph Avenue in St. Paul. Only the good stuff keeps us awake.
And I am awake, and this is Native Roots Radio. Hey, Haley, what time of the year is this? And it's almost winding down. It's not only the beginning of women's hockey, but can you guess what other time it is?
It is time to make sure you have your health insurance in check. Okay. We're in 2024 now. So, and we know that health insurance is essential for everyone in the state. That's why MinSure was created to assist you in finding the right plan. Right. The people at MinSure help you find the right plan for you, regardless of your income. So find an affordable, healthy plan today at MinSure.org.
And it's such a cool name, too. I was in New York, and they call it New York Sure, and Wisconsin calls it Why Sure, but MinSure, it's got a good name to it. Did I just go on a tangent? I think so. Hey, we're here with State Senator Mary Kunish, and we were kind of talking about last segment. I wanted her to finish her thought out, but, you know, we're talking about land back.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a movement, let's call it what it is. But again, this we were talking about the return of almost 1,300 acres of land to the Upper Sioux community that had been a federal site of distribution of food and supplies that had been that had been promised to the tribes when they were displaced, and because they would not distribute those supplies and the food, and our Dakota ancestors were starving and freezing. Remember, this was really happened in November or in the end of November, December, early December, so it's freezing cold, and it was the site of the U.S. Dakota War that eventually resulted in the 38 plus two of our ancestors being hung. Mm-hmm. So long story short, Chair Jensvold has been working very hard to advocate for these sacred lands. This is a site of skirmishes, of deaths, of burial, and sacred grounds to the Dakota that had lived there for generations upon generations. Mm-hmm. And it was just right that that land would go back. I mean, I can't imagine any of us deciding to take a strip of land that was a cemetery,
right,
with anybody living, you know, having been buried there, and turning it into a recreation center. And so those lands went back to the tribe. And the DNR is now responsible for creating or using the dollars or the allotment that they receive from that park or for that park in some kind of recreational place down in that area. Mm-hmm. It was not without controversy, let me tell you. Yeah. But at the end of the day, we did persevere, and we did get those really sacred lands back to the tribe that really fought hard to get that.
Right. Well, we had a show yesterday, State Senator, that had many politicians on, the lieutenant governors of Minnesota and Wisconsin and the governor of Wisconsin. And each of them talked about where they were visiting during, I don't know if there's such a thing for you guys as off time, but I know you've been kind of on a school tour and a tour around the state, seeing what's going on. Do you have any update on that?
Yeah. So I did. I am the chair of education finance in the Minnesota Senate, and a retired teacher of 25 years. And I have made it my mission to really create the kind of funding and policy that is student, classroom, and teacher focused. And so my partner, Senator Swadzinski, and I and our team traveled around Minnesota this summer visiting schools and libraries, because libraries are under my purview. And as a library media specialist, I really wanted to see all these different libraries.
Cool.
Because we wanted to make sure that the work that we're doing and the policies that we're putting in place and the funding that we're sending to the schools are being used in the best way possible. And it turned out that I was just down, actually drove by the Upper Sioux Park, which is now closed. And it was closed for a while now, because one of the problems was it was in such a bad shape of deterioration. But one of the roads, the main roads in front of the entrance, half of it was washed out into the gully because of flooding down there.
Wow.
And I shouldn't have, but I did. I did drive around the roadblocks because I wanted to see. And it's beautiful country down there. And I was down there to pick up a most beautiful pair of moccasins that had been beaded for me by Walter LeBlanc. And I had a lovely visit with him. And someday I'll rock my mocks with you, and it's incredible. So I say Wopila Tonka to Walter for his good work, his beautiful work, and his craftsmanship.
Yeah, that's awesome. So how many schools do you think you've because what were the numbers yesterday? And it wasn't schools, but I mean, like, I think the lieutenant governor said that they made every county like 82 yep. counties or something like that. And even the lieutenant governor of Wisconsin mentioned that there was 72 or something like that. It was just like, and I thought of you right away because I know you've been traveling all around, yeah. you know, it's like, wow.
We've probably hit close to 30 schools throughout the state. And we have a few more that we're going to go visit. I don't know if you know that there is a school for the deaf and blind down in Faribault. And it's been there for generations. It's actually a boarding school. And I think there are a few students that board down there, but they have a new spot here in the Twin Cities. So we're going to go visit them next week and then just kind of start some community conversations. Like I'll be going out to St. Michael Albertville in the evening one night, and they want to talk to us about what's going on out there, how they can't pass a referendum, which means they aren't, you know, getting the funding that they need for their schools. So we'll continue to do that, probably through my tenure, at least as the chair of education finance. It's really those voices that are going to move the good legislation.
Right. And seeing what they're doing and what they need and how they're doing it, that's imperative. And that's good medicine.
Well, right now there are so many school districts that have not, and I'm trying to think if it's 70% of the school districts have not settled their negotiations, their teacher contracts.
Wow.
And so I'm pretty concerned about that. And I have a feeling there will be some disruption and there might be some strikes. We were able to put a lot of money into our school system last year, and school districts are saying that still wasn't enough. I mean, we might have been able to increase by 4% the funding, but that doesn't mean necessarily, you know, like the administration will say that doesn't mean that teachers are going to get 4% increase. Right. Some districts are getting huge increases because they have that tax base. Some districts are not, because they have a very low or almost non-existent tax base other than farms and homeowners who can't afford any an increase in their taxes. So, you know, if it's one thing I hope to do in my tenure as the education finance chair is to find some way to equitably fund our schools. That doesn't mean equal, everybody gets the same,
right?
But especially those school districts that are struggling so hard, I'd like to find ways to keep them open and keep them healthy and viable. So I've been doing a lot of studying on that as well.
That's great, because, you know, as me being a former teacher too, you know, I think about the inner city schools, and then I think about the suburb schools, and they're like castles, you know, compared. So there is a big discrepancy. And I mean, you know,
Get out to, you know, out in greater Minnesota into some of these rural communities where they can hardly keep their building in repair. And they certainly don't have aeronautic labs and simulators. Right. They are just trying to get by, you know, so that they can stay, keep their doors open, and they don't have to consolidate with two or three other school districts and have to bus their kids 30, 40, 50 miles every day.
I just wish too, as a former teacher, is that in St. Paul, what was it, every 2 years we had a contract up. I wish it was at least three, because it seems like we're always negotiating for a contract, and it's always negotiating, like you say, for the students and for what they need, and not always what we're getting paid, because most teachers are not there for the money.
No, definitely not there for the money. But just to point out, the reason why it is every 2 years is because the legislature resets their budget every 2 years. And so once the legislator allocates those dollars, then the school districts know how much that they can use to go towards salaries. I think somebody's been telling me like around 80% of the budgets actually go to salary. That includes the superintendent and principals and administrators all the way down. But I mean, that's what schools are. They're people.
Right.
If you don't have people, you don't have schools, whether you have a building or not. And we're seeing that with the teacher shortage
right.
and all of those sort of things. So,
and, you know, sometimes some districts are top heavy too and want to really pay for the boots on the ground, like the paraprofessionals. I know we've talked about that a lot over the years, how important they've been and are for us. And I started out as one.
Yeah. I mean, if again, if I have a whole list of things that I would like to achieve in my tenure, and I really would eventually like to have some kind of a healthy uniform hourly wage, a livable hourly wage mm-hmm. for our paras. We passed unemployment insurance for our
that
hourly workers
great.
Last year. First in the nation. First in the nation.
That's a game changer.
I think it is. And I think as time goes on, it will continue to be one of those things that will help us retain and attract paras. But it also shows that we appreciate them. We respect the work that they do. And we see and hear them.
Absolutely. Hey, State Senator, do you got a time for another quick couple minutes before we let you go?
Sure, I'll stick around.
Right on. Hey, this is Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake. I'm here with Haley Cherry and State Senator Mary Kunish, and we'll be right back after this short break.
Stay with us.
Ho!
Signing up for $1 bus and train rides with the Transit Assistance Program, or TAP, is quick and easy. Do it straight from your computer or phone by uploading one of the pre-approved documents listed at metrotransit.org/TAP, along with a copy of your ID. We'll mail you a go-to card with a full year of discounted rides. For questions or translation help, call 612-373-3333. 612-373-3333.
Become a teacher and ignite change. Join the St. Paul Urban Residency Program to become a teacher in just 15 months. You can earn your master's degree and teaching license from the University of St. Thomas while earning a $30,000 stipend, single health care, and dental benefits. As an added bonus, next year's cohort, all residents will receive $20,000 towards their tuition. Apply now. Applications due February 28, 2024. Visit spps.org/sutr.
Minnesota has the only original wolf population in the continental United States.
And 80% of Minnesotans believe the wolf should be protected.
Howling for Wolves is asking Minnesotans to respect our true wildlife manager, the wolf.
Their survival is critical to our ecosystems, our communities, and even our economy.
As highly intelligent animals with strong social bonds, Minnesota wolves deserve to be protected and admired.
Learn more at howlingforwolves.org.
Let's live and let howl.
I'm Claudia with MinSure, Minnesota's official health insurance marketplace. With MinSure, you can compare health plans from multiple companies and get free help from a trusted expert. Whatever health plan you choose with MinSure, it's guaranteed to cover essential benefits so you can get the care you need. See if you qualify for discounts, available only through MinSure. If you need quality, comprehensive health insurance, get started now at MinSure.org.
Hi, this is Representative Charisse Davids from Kansas. I'm Ho-Chunk, and you're listening to Native Roots Radio.
And we're back to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and this is Robert Pilot. Hey, welcome back to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake.
This portion of the show is supported by Howling for Wolves, protecting wolves for future generations.
Howl! That was a good one. Hey, we're back with State Senator Mary Kunish, and her little grandbabies haven't woken up yet, so we're privileged to have her on for another segment here to end the show. So, you know, in regards to what Wendy always, when she sits across me, she always sends me a note. Ask them to talk about what they want to talk about. And this is your opportunity. In remembrance of Wendy in our animal section, what would you like to talk about here, State Senator, before we let you go?
Well, I'll update you on what we've been working on for MIFPA, the Minnesota Indian Family Preservation Act. And that is like a mini ICWA policy, Indian Child Welfare Act. And if you remember a year ago, we were in a panic because we were very fearful that at the federal level, the ICWA would be rescinded. And then those laws that are in place to protect our Native kids from being removed and put into the foster care system and into the, all of that would be taken away. And so Minnesota and many other states have their own like statewide ICWA. We call ours MIFPA, Minnesota Indian Family Preservation Act. Anyways, I worked on some legislation, and a whole team of lawyers and tribal people and agencies worked very hard on putting together some of those protections in a bill last session, which we passed very early in session, just to make sure that those protections were there should ICWA go away. ICWA did not go away, but as we were working on the already established MIFPA, there were things that needed to be updated. There were some corrections that needed to be made. So once again, this incredible team led by Rebecca McConkie Green and a number of other incredible lawyers and agency people and tribal folks. Anyways, they worked all summer long on the updates, and we did get those updates, and we'll get that going right away in this legislative session that begins February 12th. And then, and you know, we just want to make sure that we're always updating those sort of things.
Yeah.
Because, you know, we all know the tragedy of the removal of our children and families. Mm-hmm. And we want to make sure that does not ever happen in Minnesota in the way that it has in history.
Hear, hear. Great news. One thing we talked a little bit about before coming on the air was the flag that I'm so proud of we're having. And now I'm hearing, Haley, do you got something that we can, a little article we can comment on? I'm just in shock here about this whole situation.
I know. And unfortunately, we do have to have people where stories like this do come out. So this is actually coming from NPR News. This was posted this past Wednesday. Coils, flags, and flagpoles in St. Cloud, Minnesota sells all things flag related, such as U.S. flags, military and veteran flags, police and fire department flags. But the item that the store owner, Tim Coyle, said he can't keep in stock is the current Minnesota state flag. This quotation says, "I've had people tell me they're buying them and they're buying them in stock because they're going to fly the current flag as long as they can." Coyle said that they don't even want to fly the new one.
So a little chat between Haley and I, and I'm not putting words in your mouth, State Senator, but it's almost going by the Confederate flag down south, it sounds like. I mean, that kind of attitude. Mm-hmm. My goodness.
Yeah, there are plenty of Minnesotans. And I would say those that are of the conservative, ultra-conservative being that are not willing and not have not accepted the fact that the process that we went through to create a new Minnesota flag because of the offensive nature of the one that we had, they're not going to accept it. I fully expect Republicans to bring legislation to either halt the new flag, to go back and redo the whole flag process. You know, we hear all kinds of reasons that we should not accept and start flying the new Minnesota flag, which I you know, I'm not surprised, but I just wish that people would stop and think about, you know, the reasons that they're doing this. And when they say, I liked the old flag. And for a long time, when people would say that, I'd say, well, what did you like about that flag? Well, can you describe the flag to me?
Right.
And they couldn't even do that because they didn't understand the significance of that flag. There are communities and police departments and organizations that say, oh, it's going to cost us so much money to switch over to a new flag. But, you know, the fact of the matter is that we did have a public, transparent process. There was opportunity for submissions. And I think we had a well-rounded group of people on the commission that really did listen and learn and make good decisions. Not everybody agreed to everything. But, yeah, it's just really kind of disheartening that we have those that are using this as a political, you know, tool to be obtuse and contradictory.
Yeah. It's always the farther you get away from the tall buildings, the more conservative people are. So I'm sure we'll be seeing some blue flags that probably people never were even had the Minnesota state flag out before. Mm-hmm. Now putting it out there and trying to make a idiotic point of some sort. But mm-hmm. yeah, that's they don't have the votes for that. I mean, they can bring it up as much as they want, right?
Yeah, they are not in the majority. In the Senate, we have just a one-person minority majority. So if they were able to convince one of our Democrats to go, you know, contradictory to the flag, that could happen. Let's hope that doesn't happen. But all in all, it's a lesson to be learned. I think it was Utah that just got a new flag, and they, you know, down there was a group of people that brought a lawsuit. So I guess I'm not surprised if our Republicans had been willing to acknowledge and accept it, then I would have been surprised. But this does not surprise me, but it just adds to the extra work that we all have to do.
Yeah, and we should be working on homelessness and helping people. Instead, we're talking about flags and how, you know, again, it's the Republicans aren't for anything. They're against mm-hmm. stuff. It's just, I'm kind of like shell-shocked to hear this, because I thought the process was the process. This was good change. Change is always good, but you're always going to have people fighting for change. And it sounds like the Republican Party's really fights for change, especially when it comes with racist things. They want to keep their so-called history of racism intact. And that's what that flag reminds me of, and the poem that goes along with it.
Yeah, 100%. You're right.
Yep. I've never seen anyone flying the old Minnesota state flag ever outside of their house or on a flagpole. So it is really surprising to hear this, but what do you expect?
Yeah. Well, let's leave on a good note here. We got a minute left. State Senator, we just, like we talked about a little earlier, we're just really so happy that you're part of the Native Roots Radio family and heard around all of the country. And this is our seventh year on the air, which is surprising for me. I thought it was longer, and then some days I think it's shorter. But I just want to say thank you so much for spending time with us each week for all these years with us.
My pleasure. My pleasure. I learned some.
From Wisconsin Rapids to Stevens Point, your news, talk, and sports is 97.5 FM, locally grown radio.
You can always continue the conversation on social media. Share your thoughts when you find and follow Civic Media on Facebook, X, and Instagram.
Is it Saturday night yet? Hey folks, Jimmy K here. Join me, Rocker, and Terry Barr for Max Inc. Saturday Night. It's your weekly look at the Wisconsin music scene with a lot of fun, debut music, interviews with the artist, and live in the lair. It's Max Inc. on Saturday night across the Civic Media Radio Network, Saturday night, 6 to 10 p.m., and grab the podcast at maxincradio.com. It's Max Inc. on Civic Media. We are local music.
WFHR, Wisconsin Rapids, 1320 AM and W248 DE, broadcasting at 97.5 FM.